You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, directors, and creative minds of one of the world's great opera companies. For additional podcast interviews, subscribe to our RSS feed or visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Baritone Christopher Feigham is backstage at Lyric.
I think what we are really trying to do is make the truth of this piece come out. And there are some very funny moments, but there are also some really, really heart-wrenching moments, gut-wrenching. And the thing that is really, really exciting about it is David McVicker's passion about the piece and the way he's directing us. There are few directors like this that have such a great thought about how to put a piece together.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of one of the world's great opera companies. I'm Roger Pines of Lyric Opera of Chicago. In this episode, it's my pleasure to speak with Christopher Feigham, who's rapidly making a terrific name for himself as one of the most charismatic and vocally elegant young baritones in America. He's opening the current Lyric season as Lescaut, the heroine's brother in Massenet's Manon. Before we play the interview, here's a brief synopsis of Manon. Manon's being sent by her family to a convent. Her coach stops at an inn where she and Chevalier des Grieux fall in love. They run away to Paris and live together, but Manon is eventually tempted away from des Grieux by a much wealthier man who makes her his mistress. When she hears that des Grieux has entered a seminary, she rushes there and seduces him into abandoning his intention to become a priest. After they've spent everything they have enjoying a high life, Manon persuades des Grieux to acquire some more money by gambling. There's a villain at the gambling tables, Guillot, whose attentions Manon had previously rejected and whose coach Manon and des Grieux had stolen when they rushed off to Paris. Guillot challenges des Grieux at cards. After repeatedly losing, Guillot accuses des Grieux of cheating. The young man's father, a count, saves him from the law, but Guillot has Manon arrested as des Grieux's accomplice. Des Grieux finds her on the road to Le Havre, where she is eventually to be deported to America. She dies in his arms. So let's go to the interview now with Christopher Feigham. I hope you enjoy it. Christopher Feigham, thank you for being here.
Hi, thank
you. It's really a pleasure. You're in town to sing Lescaut in our production of Massenet's Manon to open the season. And then you'll be back with us in a few months to sing Silvio and Pagliacci. So this is your old stamping ground, isn't it?
This is my old stamping ground.
You are a Ryan Opera Center alumnus, and this, I think, is the third major role that you've returned for since you left the Opera Center. What did you come back for first?
The first thing that I came back for would have been the Lescaut, I believe.
In Manon Lescaut. And then you were in our Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
Right. Yeah. Well, what does that feel like then? I mean, you were in our Young Artist program, and now here you are on our stage in a major role. That's a huge transition, isn't it?
One of the absolute best things that that could have happened, to be able to return and work with some of the great people. Of course, the director of this show, David McVicker, directed Billy Budd when I was in the studio. So to be able to return and work with him again is one of the biggest treats of the season for me.
I really love Manon, but you probably love it for all sorts of other reasons than mine. So what's your feeling about this piece? Is it a piece you've known a while, or are you just discovering it? Or?
Just discovering it. And very much to my chagrin, it's a very different piece in terms of the Lescaut than the Puccini version. I'm right away drunk, and this will be very apparent what a slime bucket he is. that was missing a bit just in terms of the way the Puccini works out. It's not quite there in the beginning. It's a little bit there. It's a little bit there, but not as much as this. This really, really shows his seams.
Now, he is Manon's brother of the heroine. We see a lot of him. What is his function in the story.
Well, what's interesting about this is that, of course, he and I don't want to give too much away about the production so people will come see it, but it will be very clear what his objectives are. And certainly, if anyone's read the novel, this is no nice guy. One of the things that David and I were speaking about, David McVicker, was that in the book, he in fact says to Degouilleux, he says, you know, she may be beautiful, but you could make some money off of her. How's that for a nice guy?
Now, the first time we talked about this character, you used the word rogue a lot to describe him. Is it fun to play a rogue?
It can be. The way that we've worked it out in rehearsals, it's difficult to play drunk, and that's something I've realized. It's very difficult to play a convincing drunk, and you know, this is a man who drinks all the time. So I suppose that'll be something that I'll need to work on, because of course one's normal routine is to fall all over the place if you try to play a drunk. But in fact, you know, we're getting into this element of how to make him a real character, and that's the trick.
Well, it's so interesting. How often do you get a chance to play the same character in two different operas, in two different languages? It's just so interesting that Massenet and Puccini, they wrote this piece within 9 years, I think, of each other. So which version, though, do you get the greater kick out of?
Well, the meat and potatoes of the two roles for me is certainly the Massenet, because selfishly, I feel that the Lescaut was cared about more in the Massenet version, that he plays a very clear, pivotal role in the turnings of the plot. In the Puccini version, it was almost as though he was a kind of afterthought. When you read the book and how important Lescaut was in the book, in doing the Puccini and doing the Massenet, I think the Massenet is really the one that I just absolutely love. And of course, because it's always, as a performer, it's more exciting to have a true arc and starting and a stopping point than to be a little bit unsure of what exactly just happened. And it's much, much more clear in this version.
Now, we keep talking about the book, and the book is the novel, Manon Lescaut, or actually the story of the Chevalier des Grieux and Manon Lescaut, is the full title, by the Abbé Prévost, which I think was written around late 1720s. So when you are doing any piece and you have a book or a play on which it's based, of course you always read, I assume, whatever the background material is.
I do. Yeah. I try to, but at the same time, one of the difficulties, and there's always an argument about this, or I should say a healthy dialogue amongst my colleagues, how much of that information do we bring into what we're doing? And so I think it's very good to be informed. And certainly with recent characters such as the Dr. Atomic that went on last year, of course you would read about Oppenheimer and see what the man was like. But these people, they're so far removed from now that it's a question of, will the audience have read the novel? Will they have had time to go through and research all the source material for X opera that you're doing? And I really think that it's great to, just for my own mind, to have some ticking and some machinations up there going on. But at the same time, we have to be careful to not think that these things should inform every decision we make on the stage. Did Giovanni get Elvira pregnant? Can we really bring that to the stage? So it's an interesting, you know, kind of balancing act, but very important to read this stuff, I think.
Now, this is sort of an unusual production of Manon, because there are people on stage who are not singing a lot. They are sort of observing what's going on. Am I right?
We have some observers. That's true.
And
I don't know how much I should give away. It's on the video. But yes, I think about maybe 3 years ago, someone projected that this might be a new way to use choruses. In fact, I think it works fantastically well. We haven't staged the entirety of the show yet, but so far they are observing a lot of what goes on, which makes them an interesting integral part of what's happening on stage. And so oftentimes, you know, the choruses are put back into the middle of the, you know, far wings and just kind of sing and all that. And so, you know, it's really my feeling that the greatest directors involve them. And you can see this from David, the way that he interacts and has every person's movement and emotion at that second. He goes up, tells them, takes the time. So we hope that that will reflect in the performances.
Now, you clearly have a way with the divas. I mean, you were with us in Manolisko opposite Kari Damatala a few years ago, and now here you are again with Natalie Dessay and playing the same character in the French version of the same story. What is that like? You're still comparatively early in your career, and here you are opposite first one and then the other among the most renowned sopranos in the world. What is that interaction like?
Well, surprisingly, and as a side note, we had a small talk about this the other night, myself and some colleagues, about diva and how it's changed over the years. And, you know, the diva used to be the demanding, rough, difficult person to work with, yet always had the goods to back it up. Nowadays, the diva is the person that has the goods to back it up, but so far, every quote-unquote diva that I've worked with have been the most gracious people, Natalie included, Carita included. I mean, really gracious artists in helping me. They know that I'm young, and as a non-native French speaker, this could be a little bit intimidating working with someone who is, but she's very, very helpful, very patient with me, and is, as I say, just a very, very gracious colleague. And we have fun on top of it, so that's what matters.
Now, you're coming back to us for the seventh production of the season. That's Silvio in Pagliacci. Is that going to be a major contrast somehow with Manon? Very different kind of music, very different kind of character?
Dependent always on the staging and how we do it, but yes, completely different. I can't, in my mind, I can't imagine Silvio to be a drunkard running around groping people, as it were. So it will be a contrast, and my great colleague and friend Ana Maria Martinez will be playing opposite me, and I'm absolutely looking forward to this this time.
Now, when a Ryan Opera Center member leaves us after a couple of years and starts to make his or her way successfully in companies all over the country, as you are now doing, I'm always eager when that singer comes back to us to hear exactly what tools they acquired here in the program that are serving them best in their career. What really was most invaluable in their time with us that they will always sort of have with them. So what occurs to you that you learned here that you thought, you know, after you'd been with several other companies, I know how to handle that because I learned how to do it at Lyric, this kind of thing.
The first thing that I acquired here was Richard Perlman and Renata Scotto suggesting to me that I was a baritone, masquerading as a bass baritone. That was the first and best thing that that I brought from here. The second greatest thing was working with numerous people that gave us all, I think, the idea of how really, really rough it is out there. That it is true, you have to have a thick skin. And by that, that's not having things hit you and them bouncing off, but you have to be able to take criticism on a daily basis and not take it personally. You know, I'll be in shows anywhere, and a director or a conductor will get frustrated and yell at us, you know, take an aggressive posture towards us. But we have to realize it's not a personal issue 99% of the time. It's in fact the passion of this music that we all feel so passionately about it that sometimes the only way we can get these things across is to get a, you know, passionate dialogue going, as I like to say. So the greatest thing about being here was being exposed to those scenarios and seeing how other artists, you know, ahead of us, were able to diffuse situations, what they felt strongly about, how they would maneuver their way through the discourse to find a happy medium between the two of them. It's really, in any of these programs, what's invaluable, especially with the Ryan Opera Center, is the opportunity to work with international stars directors, singers, conductors, and really have the opportunity to be exposed to what these people are in it for. And when it becomes less about the personality and more about the piece, those are the best houses. And that's why I love the opera house here. It's music first. Thank God. What a great opera house here in Chicago.
Now, I think people listening are probably curious about, how does somebody put this kind of career together? I mean, do you have a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan for this career, or is that really possible to do and stick to it? How do you look at the future?
It's very tricky. Of course, we are oftentimes contracted out much in advance. At the same time, I'm still at a stage in my career where I'm having to take a lot of new roles on. So in terms of planning out 5 years in advance, I would plan out with my manager, with Matthew, and we'll talk about certain roles maybe that I would like to do. We'll talk about roles that I wouldn't like to do, that I'd like to wait for a while on. The other big thing, and I think the most important thing in this business is financial planning. You never know when you're going to have a couple of months here, a couple months there that you're going to be off, and yet you have to have the money for health insurance, for property taxes, for all the things that real life injects into this sometimes fantasy world that we live in as opera singers. So I think first and foremost, that's the most important thing that I've had to do. And that's not only with myself and my wife, but also with my manager, planning out to see, okay, here's a great opportunity, and maybe it doesn't pay enough to break even, but, there's something after that that's very good. And so it's also planning in that matter, just really trying to find a way to work on the best pieces with the best people. That's the plan.
Now, you still live in Chicago.
I do.
What keeps you here instead of doing what many of your colleagues do, which is to head off to New York?
Well, I had a big discussion about it with my management. And the great thing about Chicago, for me, aside from my connection to the Opera House here, that I have some very close connections with the coaches that I can now prepare roles for when I'm going on the road. But the other thing was just from the financial side of it, to be able to live in a city that is a little bit easier on the pocketbook, but at the same time, that money that I am saving in living here can take me to New York or anywhere 3 or 4 times a month in just the money I save. So it's partly a quality of life issue for me. I like trees on the sidewalks rather than just cement. But it's also also just the ability to be in a place that I have a network, a support network. I spend time in New York, and it's a great city. I'm always happy to be there. I'm always happy to go and perform there. But it's nice to get away and catch my breath and have the opportunity to prepare things in a slower city, as it were.
So what are your favorite hangouts in Chicago? I mean, whether restaurant or neighborhoods, or when you're spending leisure time here, where do we find you generally?
When I'm in town, I love during the summertime running by the lake, one of the greatest treasures in the city, and I only hope that we continue to be able to enjoy it as a public space. Certainly Piper's Alley in Old Town is a fantastic art house. I like that place a lot. And then restaurants, stuffed pizza. You can't live without stuffed pizza every so often, and some good ribs.
Now, anything else we want to say about Manon in exciting the public about this piece? I mean, it's such a sensational cast with you and Natalie Dessay and Jonas Kaufman and David Cangelosi. It's a splendid, splendid production and a wonderful conductor. We haven't mentioned him yet, Emmanuel Villon. So what is it about Manon that you think will be a special sort of lure for the public, especially for people who don't know the piece?
Aside from the great work that Natalie is doing, it's astounding. These are the moments that you're in rehearsals in awe of your colleagues because of what an amazing, amazing talent she is. What a beautiful voice. I could go on for hours about how great it is to be in the room with her. But we have such a great team assembled, and I think what we are really trying to do is make the truth of this piece come out. And it will be there are some very funny moments, but there are also some really, really heart-wrenching moments, gut-wrenching. And the thing that is really, really exciting about it is David McVicker's passion about the piece and the way he's directing us. There are few directors like this that have such a great thought about how to put a piece together, and the way he takes all of the pieces and creates this intertwined piece that really, really should come out. And I think people will walk away hopefully entertained, but also provoked.
What I love is that it cast in such depth when you have somebody like Jake Gardner singing the role of Bretigny, when you have so many wonderful people in our current Ryan Opera Center, because there's so many roles mm-hmm. in this piece. Mm-hmm. It's practically the whole Opera Center that you hear on stage, and such sort of class in the way that it's produced. So I think we're in for something truly wonderful.
I think so as well.
So thank you so much, Christopher, and best of luck with Manon.
Thank you very much. Much Roger Pines.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.